Welcome back, everybody. We're diving deep today into free speech, but in the age of AI and misinformation.
Ooh, a timely one.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, what's interesting is we have this awesome collection of sources from you guys, historical perspectives, legal proposals. We've got how AI works, even some pop culture stuff sprinkled in.
Wow, covering all the bases.
Yeah. So really what we're trying to figure out is, you know, how do we protect free speech?
Right.
While also, you know, dealing with this problem of harmful misinformation, especially with AI kind of adding fuel to the fire.
Yeah, it's tricky, right? That balance is always a challenge, even before AI. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
We always had that tension, right?
Yeah.
Between free speech and, you know, being responsible.
Yeah. And one of the things that really struck me in the material you sent was that link between free speech and societal progress.
Oh, interesting.
It seems like the societies that really protect free speech,
yeah,
they tend to be more innovative, more just and resilient.
Hmm. I see what you mean. Yeah. There are some pretty compelling examples in there.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder why that is right.
Right.
Like, what is it about open discourse that seems to foster those positive traits?
Yeah. Because it's not just about letting people say whatever they want.
Right. It's got to be more to it.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, even before AI was in the picture, we still had those lines, right?
Sure.
Like defamation and inciting violence. These were issues way before algorithms came along.
Yeah, those are the classic challenges, right? Figuring out where's the line between, you know, protected speech and speech that actually causes harm.
Right.
But AI, I mean, it's like it's adding a whole other layer of complexity.
It really is.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of these sources are highlighting, like how AI can spread misinformation on a scale we've never seen before.
Right. It's not just somebody with a megaphone anymore. It's
almost woven into the fabric of how we...
It's everywhere.
Yeah, how we communicate now.
Yeah, and it's because of how some of these AI systems are trained.
Right.
You know, one method they talked about was self-supervision mode.
Self-supervision.
Yeah, so basically they give the AI like a massive data set.
Okay.
And it kind of teaches itself, you know, it finds the patterns and relationships.
Oh, so it's just kind of let loose.
But without human guidance,
yeah,
you know, this can lead to problems.
It makes me think about like giving a kid free rein in a library.
Exactly.
With no guidance whatsoever.
Not a librarian.
Yeah, they might learn some stuff, but they're probably going to absorb some pretty questionable information along the way.
Yeah, and it's like letting the AI loose in the biggest library ever, the internet.
Oh, wow.
Which is why that human feedback is so crucial.
Right.
You know, it helps correct those errors and steer the AI, you know, towards more accurate and reliable outputs.
So there are people kind of fact-checking the AI.
Yeah, and the sources actually point to some really specific examples of how this human oversight is implemented.
Oh, that's cool.
Pretty fascinating.
So we've got this powerful combo AI that can, you know, generate and spread misinformation so fast, and it's often convincing.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder governments are having trouble keeping up.
Right. It's like trying to wrangle, you know, a digital wildfire.
Yeah, it's like, how do you even start to regulate that?
Right. And it raises that fundamental question. How do governments balance, you know, the need to combat this AI-driven disinformation without, you know, stepping on the toes of legitimate free speech?
It's like walking a tightrope, for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the solutions they proposed was this law of intent.
The law of intent.
I got to say, that one really caught my eye.
Yeah.
It's bold.
It is.
So for our listener, can you kind of unpack what that is?
Sure. So basically, the law of intent would mandate that any speech has to be clearly labeled with its intent.
Okay.
And get this, the label has to be just as prominent as the speech itself.
Oh, so you can't bury it in the fine print.
No, it's got to be front and center.
Wow.
It's all about transparency.
So instead of just reading a headline or watching a video, you'd also see a label, you know, saying, is this a fact? Is it research? Is it an opinion?
Right.
Almost like nutritional labels for information.
Uh-huh. I like that. And the source actually goes into the specific categories they're proposing.
Oh, wow. What are they?
So we've got fact, we've got research, opinion, faith, entertainment, art, and then unknown.
Oh, wow. That's quite a list.
Yeah. And each one has its own, you know, nuances and implications.
So diving into those categories is where things get really interesting.
Definitely.
Let's start with fact.
Okay.
So in this framework, what actually makes something a fact?
So according to the source material, a fact is something that's, you know, verifiably true.
Okay.
It's presented objectively and it can be confirmed by, multiple reputable sources.
Not just like one person's interpretation, but something that's pretty much established knowledge.
Yeah.
Grounded in evidence that you can actually check.
Exactly. And what's interesting is, because this category is claiming to be true,
right,
it comes with the highest level of scrutiny.
Oh, so there are consequences.
Yeah. The source material even suggests there could be penalties for deliberately misrepresenting something as fact.
That makes sense. You don't want people just throwing around facts all willy-nilly.
Right. Got to have some accountability.
Exactly. But of course, not everything is black and white.
Right.
There are those gray areas.
Lots of gray.
When it comes to information.
Wow.
And that's where research comes in, right?
Right. Research acknowledges that, knowledge is a process.
Yeah, it's always evolving.
Yeah, it's not always settled. Mm. So it's about presenting information as part of an inquiry.
Okay.
Grounded in evidence and analysis, but open to revision.
So it could change.
As our understanding evolves. Yeah.
I like that. So it's like saying, hey, this is what we know so far.
Right.
But we're still figuring things out.
Exactly. And that distinction between fact and research is really important.
Yeah.
Especially when you think about how, new scientific discoveries or historical interpretations.
Oh, yeah.
They can change what we used to think were facts.
Things we thought were set in stone.
Right. The source material is really clear that those categories shouldn't be blurred.
Yeah. Because they have different levels of certainty.
It makes you think about the responsibility of researchers.
Sure.
You know how they present their findings.
Yeah.
They need to be upfront about, what they don't know yet.
Right.
And not present early findings as absolute truth.
Absolutely. Okay. So now let's jump to the other end of the spectrum. Opinion.
Okay. Opinions.
This is where things get a bit more... well, personal, right?
Definitely. This category feels like it covers so much ground.
It does.
Everything from, your favorite ice cream to your stance on, complex social issues.
Right. It's all those beliefs and judgments that aren't necessarily rooted in, hard facts.
Yeah. It's acknowledging that human experience is subjective.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And importantly, the source material says that this category wouldn't be subject to penalties under the law of intent.
Oh, that makes sense.
Because it's understood to be inherently subjective.
Yeah. You can't really penalize someone for having a different opinion.
Right.
Right. That wouldn't make sense. No. And there are a few more fascinating categories in here.
Oh, what else?
One that really stood out to me was faith.
Faith.
It seems to recognize that certain deeply held beliefs might fall outside the realm of what's empirically provable.
Right. So things that you can't necessarily test or measure.
Yeah. Like religious doctrines or spiritual experiences.
It's about acknowledging that there are different ways of knowing and understanding the world.
Exactly. And I think that's really important, especially in our increasingly, diverse and globalized society.
Yeah, to recognize that people from different backgrounds might have different belief systems.
Right, different ways of seeing things.
So we've got fact, research, opinion, and faith.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to something a bit lighter.
Okay, sounds good.
What about the entertainment category?
Ah, entertainment. The land of make-believe and fun.
Haha, right, where the lines between reality and fantasy can get blurred.
Oh, yeah.
So how do they define that one?
So entertainment is content that's mainly meant to amuse, entertain, or divert.
So that would be like movies, TV shows, video games, music.
The whole shebang.
Yeah, all those things designed to bring us joy, make us think, or just, help us escape reality for a bit.
Exactly. And like opinion and faith, this category wouldn't be subject to penalties under the law of intent. Because it's not primarily about conveying factual information.
Makes sense. Now, art is where things get really interesting, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Art, yeah, it can be so subjective.
It can be anything.
And open to interpretation.
Yeah, and multifaceted.
Definitely.
How on earth would they define that one?
Well, the source material really tries to wrestle with that complexity. You know, they define art as a form of expression that can actually encompass all the other categories.
Oh, wow.
But it's ultimately subjective and open to interpretation.
It makes me think about like a painting that depicts a historical event.
Right.
It might be based on facts and research,
right?
But it's also filtered through the artist's unique perspective and style.
Exactly. And the source is very clear about protecting artistic expression.
Okay.
Even when it blurs those lines between categories.
Yeah, because if you try to like dox art into a neat category, it kind of loses its essence.
Right. It's about that freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where does that leave us with unknown?
Unknown, the mystery box.
It sounds like a catch-all for everything that doesn't fit neatly elsewhere.
Yeah, in a way it is.
Right.
It's for that content where the intent just isn't clear,
right,
or you can't easily determine
it. It's like those random memes or social media posts where you're like, Wait, are they serious?
Exactly.
Or are they just messing with me?
And the source says that content labeled as unknown wouldn't carry any penalties under the law of intent
Okay.
because it recognizes that ambiguity is, part of communication.
Right. Sometimes it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got these seven categories: fact, research, opinion, faith, entertainment, art, and unknown.
Quite a framework.
Yeah, it is. But I have to ask, how would this actually work in the real world?
Right.
Are we all going to be walking around with like intent labels on our foreheads?
I hope not.
Okay, good.
But the source material actually gives us some real-world examples to think about.
Okay, like what?
Like, imagine you're scrolling through your social media feed.
Okay.
Under this law of intent, those platforms would have to label every post with its intended category.
So, like when you're writing a tweet or a Facebook post, you wouldn't just type your message.
Right.
You'd also have to pick a category from like a drop-down menu.
Exactly. Like, is this a fact, an opinion, or something else?
And then the platform would display that category right next to your post.
Right there for everyone to see.
Wow. I wonder how that would change the way we talk to each other online.
Right.
Would people be more careful about what they post if they know their intent is being highlighted like that?
It's an interesting question, and I think that's really what the law of intent is trying to do.
What's that?
It's trying to bring more transparency and accountability to the digital world.
I can see that.
Yeah.
But what about communication that goes beyond text?
Oh, good
Like
point.
photos and videos and audio. How do you label intent in those cases?
Well, the source suggests using icons.
Icons.
Yeah, those universal symbols we see everywhere.
Like a play button for video.
Exactly. So they're proposing intent icons, like
Co-op.
little visual cues.
That makes sense. So, for example, a news organization could put a fact icon on their video report.
Right. Or a musician could use the art icon for a new song.
Yeah, it's almost like we're creating a new visual language.
A whole new way of communicating.
Yeah, signaling intent without even using words.
Exactly. But then that brings up another question.
What's that?
Who decides what goes where?
Oh, yeah, good point. Is it the person who created the content, the platform that's hosting it, or somebody else entirely?
Well, the source proposes a kind of shared responsibility model.
Okay.
It says the person creating the content has the initial responsibility for categorizing it,
Right.
but the platforms also have to make sure it's accurate and consistent.
So, like, if I post something on Facebook and it's clearly in the wrong category,
Right.
Facebook could flag it and say, hey, you need to rethink this.
Yeah. Or even take it down if it violates their rules.
It's like a system of checks and balances.
Exactly. To try and prevent abuse.
Makes sense. But what happens when content is shared and reshared multiple times?
Ooh, that is a tricky one.
Like, let's say I share something that's miscategorized and then someone shares it from my page.
Oh.
Who's accountable then?
That's where they introduce this idea of a distributor.
Distributor.
Yeah, anyone who actively shares or republishes content, even if they didn't create it.
Okay, so both me and the person who shared it from my page could be held responsible.
Potentially, yes. But the source also emphasizes that the platform itself
Right.
would share some of that responsibility,
To make sure things are labeled correctly.
even after it's been shared multiple times.
Wow. It really highlights how much power these platforms have
They really do.
and the responsibility that comes with that power.
For sure. This reminds me of all the debates about content moderation.
Yeah, me too.
This law of intent seems to take it a step further,
Yeah, adding a whole new layer of complexity.
Definitely, and potentially a whole new set of challenges.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, one of the more challenging scenarios they talk about is categorizing historical content.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
I mean, we're talking about a massive amount of information.
It's overwhelming.
Books, speeches, documents, all created way before the digital age.
Before any of this was even a thought.
Right. So who would be responsible for going back and labeling all of that?
It sounds impossible, right?
Yeah, it does.
And the source acknowledges that it's a huge undertaking.
So who do they think should do it?
They suggest that institutions like libraries, museums, universities, the places that archive and digitize this stuff,
They would be the ones stuck with this task.
most likely.
So imagine like teams of librarians and archivists
Oh my gosh.
huddled over these centuries-old documents debating.
Arguing over whether a speech is a fact or an opinion.
Yeah, based on, the context of its time.
It's kind of mind-boggling.
It is. And for some of that historical content, especially stuff created in a totally different social and political context,
Right.
it might be impossible to figure out what the original intent was.
The source acknowledges that, yeah.
Which kind of highlights a fundamental limitation to this whole approach.
Yeah, it does.
Like, can we really understand the nuances of intent behind something created in a completely different era?
That's a tough one.
And should we even try to judge historical figures by our own modern standards?
That's a really good question.
So it seems like the law of intent, while it's definitely ambitious,
it is,
and thought-provoking,
it is that too,
it's not a magic solution.
No silver bullet.
Yeah, there are real logistical and philosophical challenges here.
For sure. And with any big idea like this, we have to think critically.
Right.
We need to look at both the intended benefits,
yeah,
and the potential downsides, you know, the unintended consequences.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've spent a lot of time unpacking this law of intent.
We have.
But now I think we need to zoom out a bit.
Okay.
And ask the bigger question. Is this even a good idea?
Right. Is it worth trying to implement something like this?
Yeah.
That is the million-dollar question.
It is.
And the source material actually presents arguments on both sides.
Okay, so let's start with the potential benefits.
Okay.
What are the upsides of something like the law of intent?
Well, one of the main arguments is that it could increase trust in information sources.
Hmm. How so?
If people can immediately see the intended purpose behind a piece of content,
right,
it might help them decide whether to trust it.
Makes sense. Yeah. Especially with those categories like fact and research.
Right, where accuracy is so important.
Yeah. Right now, it feels like we're just drowning in information.
It is a lot.
From every direction, social media, news podcasts.
Everywhere you turn.
And it's hard to know what to believe.
Yeah. You can't trust everything you see.
So the law of intent is like a signal flare.
Cutting through the fog.
Yeah, helping you find those sources that are committed to accuracy and transparency.
That's the idea. And, you know, that transparency could lead to greater accountability.
How so?
If people and organizations know that they could be held responsible for, you know, misrepresenting their intent.
Right.
It might make them more careful about what they say in the first place.
So it raises the stakes.
Yeah, and it makes the consequences of spreading misinformation more real.
Yeah, and that could incentivize people to be more accurate and honest.
Exactly. It's like that old Spider-Man quote, "With great power comes great responsibility."
Oh, yeah. I love that one.
Right. If you have the power to reach huge audiences
with your words,
shouldn't you also be responsible for making sure those words are truthful?
Yeah. It's a compelling argument, but it also feels like a slippery slope.
It does.
Like, yep. Where do you draw the line between accountability for deliberate misinformation,
right,
and accidentally shutting down legitimate speech?
Yeah. And who defines what misinformation even is?
Those are tough questions.
Yeah. No easy answers there.
Now, the source material also says that the law of intent could lead to a more informed public overall.
Right. It's about empowering people.
It's like giving everybody a new set of lenses to view the world of information.
Exactly. And not just on an individual level.
But on a societal level.
Right. It's about cultivating media literacy.
Oh, that's interesting.
Helping people understand the different types of content,
yeah,
how to evaluate the information they encounter.
So it's a pretty ambitious goal.
It is.
To shift the whole culture of information consumption.
Yeah. Towards critical thinking and discernment.
I wonder if we're ready for that as a society.
That's a big question.
But we can't just focus on the good stuff, right?
Right. We got to look at both sides.
We need to consider the downsides, too.
Absolutely. And the source material doesn't shy away from that. Yeah. They actually spend a lot of time exploring those potential drawbacks.
Okay. So let's dig into those downsides.
Let's do it.
What are some of the concerns they raise?
Well, one of the biggest worries is that it could stifle creativity.
Oh, really?
Especially in those categories like art and entertainment.
Right. Where pushing boundaries is usually a good thing.
Yeah.
But if artists are constantly worried about getting penalized.
Right. Or miscategorized.
Wouldn't that lead to self-censorship?
Potentially.
Yeah.
It could have a chilling effect on expression.
It makes me think about all the art movements that were controversial in their time.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine if those artists had to label their work with a specific intent.
Mm.
Would we have lost some groundbreaking art?
It's a valid concern.
It is.
And the source material really grapples with that.
Okay, good.
They emphasize protecting artistic freedom.
Right.
And creating safeguards within the law of intent to prevent it from being used to silence artists.
But who decides what those safeguards are?
Right. And who even defines what art is in the first place?
Yeah, good point. Those decisions could be biased.
They could.
Especially because different cultures have different ideas about what art is.
Exactly. And any system based on human judgment is going to be imperfect, right?
There's always a risk of bias.
Yeah, conscious or unconscious.
And with something as subjective as art, that risk is even bigger.
For sure.
Another concern is that it puts the burden of proof on individuals.
Oh, yeah, that's a big
It
one.
seems like the person creating or sharing something would be responsible for categorizing it correctly.
Right.
But what if they make a mistake?
Or what if they disagree with the category?
Yeah.
That's a key point.
Yeah.
And the source recognizes that this burden of proof could be a real barrier to free speech.
How so?
If people are afraid of getting penalized for miscategorizing their content,
Even if it's an honest mistake.
yeah, they might just not share their ideas at all.
Right. It could create a culture of fear and self-censorship.
Exactly,
Yeah.
especially for people who don't understand the law.
Or who are already marginalized
Right.
and don't have the resources to navigate these complex systems.
It raises some serious concerns about fairness.
Yeah. Would this law disproportionately impact certain groups?
It's a question we have to consider.
Now, the source material does offer some counterarguments to that.
Okay.
Proponents of the law of intent say that this level of accountability is necessary
Right.
to fight misinformation.
Right. Because if people know they could be held responsible,
Right.
they'll be more careful about what they share.
That makes sense.
That did.
It's like a deterrent.
Exactly.
By introducing consequences, it encourages people to think more critically.
And to double check their facts.
Right. And to be more responsible with the information they're spreading.
That's the hope.
Okay. But then we're back to that slippery slope.
We are.
Where do you draw that line
Yeah.
between accountability and accidentally silencing legitimate speech?
It's a balancing act.
And who gets to decide what's misinformation in the first place?
Those are huge questions.
They are.
And any attempt to make laws about this is going to be controversial.
Yeah, people can have strong opinions.
And it's important to remember that any system, no matter how well-intentioned, can be misused.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So we've talked about the burden of proof on individuals, but what about bias in the categorization process itself?
Oh, yeah, that's another major concern.
Like, who decides what's a fact versus an opinion or research versus entertainment?
Right, because if the people in charge of categorizing have their own agendas,
Yeah.
that could really skew the whole system.
Imagine if people in power used this law to silence their critics
Scary thought.
or to push their own narrative.
Or if algorithms were used to automatically categorize content
Yeah.
and those algorithms were trained on biased data,
Oh, wow.
that could perpetuate existing inequalities and just reinforce the dominant viewpoints.
Those are some disturbing scenarios.
They are.
It really highlights the need for strong safeguards and checks and balances.
We can't just assume it'll work perfectly.
Right, and constant vigilance to make sure this law, if it's implemented,
Right.
doesn't become a tool for censorship or oppression.
That's a key point.
So we're facing a classic dilemma here.
We are.
On one hand, we could have more transparency and accountability online.
Which could help fight misinformation. But
Right.
on the other hand, we have to worry about free expression.
Yeah. And the potential for bias and concentrating power in the hands of a few.
It's a tough trade-off.
It really is.
It makes you think about what we value as a society.
Yeah.
Do we prioritize security and control?
Right.
Or freedom of expression?
Or order over open debate.
These are questions we all need to grapple with.
We do. This has been quite a journey.
It has.
We've explored the challenges, the possible solutions, and the ethical dilemmas around free speech, AI, and misinformation.
It's a lot to unpack.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's important to remember that this conversation isn't over.
Oh, it's just the beginning.
This is just the start of a much larger discussion about how we navigate this whole world of information in the digital age.
It's a complex landscape.
It is. But we've given you the tools and the insights to start thinking critically about the information you come across.
The power is in your hands.
So here's a final thought to leave you with. Could something like the law of intent actually work? And what role do you want to play in shaping the future of information?
Those are good questions to ponder.
They are. We encourage you to keep exploring these issues, talk to others, and be active, informed citizens in this digital world.
That's the best we can do.
It is. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and stay engaged.
We'll see you next time.